Welcome to the Rebirth Podcast. I'm Steve Gang. I'll be joined with Dan Wood. This is our first episode, so bear with us through the ums, ahs, and general ramblings, but let's get into it.
Using the sleeper app, the first game we'll talk about from last week, your game versus Brett Harley Jarvis. Sleeper's obviously the best app, so you're able to tell like what the expected point totals were going to be. So you definitely overachieved on this, but did you think you were going to come out with the win, being your projected score is 126 to Harley Jarvis's 134?
I mean, I felt good about my team coming out of the draft. I thought my running backs were strong. That turned out to be the case, at least in week one. I obviously was hesitant on QB because I had cut Derek Carr like 2 days before.
Went with your last pick overall.
Correct. So yeah, I just, you know, I figured Derek Carr is a known quantity and I was looking for upside. So Tua's got a bunch of new weapons this year and I just wanted to see what that offense is going to look like. I feel like I know what the Raiders offense is going to be and the ceiling is just a little too low for what I'm looking for fantasy. So I decided to.
How do you feel
to...
about that decision with how you saw Davante Adams, Derek Carr's new weapon, playing out?
I mean, like I said, I mean, I knew he was going to gobble up targets. That's fine. But, you know, as far as QB points, I feel like in recent years in fantasy football, it's been all about, you know, mobile quarterbacks and young talent. That's not what I think of when I think of Derek Carr. So, you know, he can pepper, you know, Davante Adams with 17 targets a game, which is what he got this week. And Davante Adams put up gaudy numbers. That's fine. But didn't translate to Derek Carr numbers, and that's what I was kind of banking on. You know, you really need to see something special from quarterbacks to really get those top eight, top five numbers you're looking for. And I didn't see Derek Carr doing it for me. Plus, it's boring. Who wants Derek Carr on your team?
And for the record, Derek Carr did score 4 more points than Tua this week.
Yeah, which is fine. I mean, I'm you know, that's going to happen some weeks, and some weeks it's probably going to be the flip side. He may outscore him the entire season, but you know, fantasy is about numbers, but it's also about like having fun. And like, I just didn't want to be staring at Derek Carr on my roster for the rest of the year. So he lost out.
All right. Well, we're not gonna spend too much time talking about Tua and Derek Carr. There are plenty of better people to talk about. Yeah, you got two potential first round picks on the draft. Both Swift and Barkley have been first round in previous drafts. So it's nice to see them showing their true colors. Hopefully that the first week isn't just a fluke, but they both looked pretty fucking good.
They really did. And I mean, as long as I saw DeAndre Swift popped up on the injury report today, which is a little concerning. People thought it was just a, you know, rest day initially, but then he went to questionable. So we'll see if he can keep those numbers up. But seeing Saquon being Saquon again was really, really nice.
Yeah. Looks like he rolled his week in the first, or rolled his ankle in the first week, but just minor, yeah. Maybe giving a little rest and showing that he can still be what he is. You do have two Lions. Relying on the Lions' offense is bold, but I guess with that defense, it's going to be lots of shootouts.
I mean, I have good faith in the Lions' offense. It showed some potential last week, and especially, you know, Swift and Amon-Ra St. Brown in those last couple weeks. I mean, they were going off. So, I mean, you know, if it ain't broke, they added some pieces in the draft. They've got, you know, young talent on the line. That's what I'm looking for in fantasy offenses. So you can't just go with the stigma. I mean, the Lions suck. The Lions will always suck. But they can still produce in fantasy.
Mark Andrews, obviously great. Brandon Cooks kind of put up what you'd expect of him. Seems to be he's pretty much a 10 to 15 point guy and occasionally can blow up, but pretty consistent with that. So it's always nice to have someone consistently getting those double digits.
That's what I want to flex. I'm not looking for 30. I'm not looking for 2. You give me 11.2 points in a flex, and I'll be happy.
What about Terry McLaurin? Last question about your team, because, yeah, we won't talk about Andrews, but Terry McLaurin, 2 for 4, 58 yards and a touchdown.
He got a 50-yard touchdown to save
pretty much on one play.
Yeah, without that one pass, he's 1 for 3 for 8 yards.
Without that pass, I mean, you're not getting the scoring title. You're not looking that good. Like,
I mean,
live and die by one pass.
It's concerning. I guess. I'm not hitting the panic button just yet. I know he's talented. I mean, I guess Carson Wentz is medium talented. I think their defense is not very good, so they're going to be in a lot of throwing situations. So, I mean, I think, you know, Curtis Samuel obviously broke out week one. I think once defenses start keen on him and realizing that Carson Wentz is going to look his way a lot and they're going to do a lot of gadget play with him stuff, that's got to give more leeway to Terry McLaurin to get open more often. So I'm not hitting the panic button just yet. Wide receiver is pretty thin on my roster because I went pretty running back heavy. So I may need to make some adjustments here coming down the middle part of the season if he's not producing, but I'll give him a couple more weeks to show it. And like I said, I mean, you know, he finished with 13 points. So there are a lot of people who feast on one long touchdown. And if he does that every week, then he ends up a top 10 receiver. So, you know.
All right. Continuing on over to the Brett Harley Jarvis side. He looks like he'd draft a good team. He got the first overall pick, and Taylor definitely pulled through there. But
yeah, he came through.
As you said in the write-up, like, how sustainable is 31 carries?
How sustainable is 31 carries for the season? This is true. Now, I mean, you know, he's not super old. He's obviously the feature back. There was a full season where Zeke got 30 carries a game. He did great. But, you know, at some point, you've got to slow down or else it's unsustainable. But,
31 carries and 7 targets.
He averaged a little over 5 yards a carry. If he can do that even on, you know, 25 carries a game, he'll be fine. So that was definitely a takeaway. I mean, Joe Burrow still almost cracking 20 with 5 turnovers. You know, if he can not do that and just keep throwing it to Ja'Marr Chase, I think he'll be fine.
I mean, yeah, you take away those 5 turnovers, he scores almost 30 points and still doesn't even come close to you, but Harley Jarvis breaks 100.
Yes. Yeah, I mean, he didn't have a bad game. It really was not a bad game. I mean, it's going to be hard to beat somebody who puts up 150 anytime. But usually, you know, if I can get above 100, you know, that's a decent week. Amari Cooper hurt him. You had to have seen that coming. He's playing for the Browns.
But I mean, yeah. He'd starting receiver for a team or going for a pass-catching running back or the third wide receiver on one of the highest-powered offenses. Yeah, I guess I probably would have went Isaiah McKenzie and hoped for that touchdown. But
really anything else.
Isaiah McKenzie without that touchdown actually still does better than Amari Cooper if he just got the 19 yards. So, I mean, Amari Cooper was bold draft strategy, but if he can stay alive throughout the season, it might pay off in the end when Watson comes off suspension for.
But that's the thing. He doesn't always. He gets hamstrings. He gets, you know, ankles. He's always got something. Now he'll play hurt a decent amount. He did for the Cowboys a lot, but he does disappearing acts. He'll play hurt and get a catch, 2 catches, and just play dummy the rest of the game. So, I mean, he was on my no draft list going in, and I felt like there was a good reason, and at least in week one, I feel pretty validated.
And then so, I feel like the last takeaway to just keep piling on Bart Harley Jarvis, excuse me, who I think finished last in your power rankings, but his early draft kicker only coming away with 6 points cannot feel good for the BHJ.
I mean, and you hear it time and time again. I mean, you know, Justin Tucker's the most accurate kicker in football. This is the truth. Do you get points for accuracy in fantasy football? You don't. You're looking for opportunity. You know, you're looking for people who are going to kick a lot of field goals. I would say the Ravens are going to score, but are they going to kick a lot of field goals? I just don't know. I mean, is it worth that kind of investment? I'm just not sure. Also, he was second in the draft rankings to good old Milkshake Teddy.
Second worst draft.
Second worst draft, yes. Next to Milkshake Teddy. But it was going to be hard to beat Milkshake with his wide receiver or the running back room.
Yeah, which we'll get to Milkshake Teddy's team.
Oh, we'll talk about it
here soon. But yeah, we'll move on to my matchup because I was battling for the high score, and if fucking Brandon McManus would have made that 64 yarder, which
I mean, you had a we'll call it a well rounded performance here. One starter under double digits.
Can't complain. And I mean, that's a tight end. I'm okay with that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
tight end scoring 7 points, like
without a huge draft investment. You know, it wasn't like you're not taking a Waller or a Kittle, anything like that. You know,
got it in the sixth round. AJ Brown is gonna get a lot of targets, but people will start covering him more, and Goddard will get open. And no, I'm not worried about it.
As we know, it's all about opportunity and targets, and you know, 4 isn't a ton, but you know, averaging 20 yards a catch. I don't think you can measure that.
I mean, I feel like my takeaway, or yeah, I guess what are your top 3 takeaways with we'll do my team and then we'll do the Lucky Ducks.
Top 3 takeaways for your team. I think wide receiver depth clearly is going to be your strength. You know,
it's so good, it's going to be a problem.
Cooper Kupp,
Julio Jones is going to blow up.
That's what I'm saying. You got Kupp and Pittman both above 20. You know, Gabe Davis, what, you got him in like the 6th or 7th round? You know, putting up 16. And that's with, yeah, Julio sitting on the bench and Christian Kirk. Like I said, they had
Julio on the bench, Kirk on the bench.
That Kirk performance
had 12 receptions.
Inevitable. 12 targets, yeah. But,
12 targets, yeah.
Yeah, 117 on 6 receptions. You know, you had a touchdown in that. You know, he's above 20. On the bench, so I like the running back depth. I think you got a lot of trade bait there that you could really flip into some really strong running backs. I mean, maybe a top flight tight end if you wanted to go that route, but you know, the options are there for sure. So that's one of my big takeaways. I think James Conner's usage was okay. I might be a little concerned with only the 10 touches. And you know, having a mobile quarterback down there, I'm always concerned about getting touchdowns vultured. So, you know, for the draft investment, I think he was a 3rd round pick. I'd probably look to see a little more, you know, a little more reliance on the running back in that kind of position. Benjamin is really, I read that he was commanding, field time just by how he's playing. So he's kind of got that Chase Edmonds role he's filling that role from last year with Chase Edmonds and the Dolphins. So I guess, you know, for somebody I drafted to be a lead bell cow back, I might be a little concerned there.
But I mean, I will say to Ben myself, you look at the other 3rd round running backs drafted, Breece Hall across the page, he's scoring 5.6. Cam Akers barely even touching the ball.
I don't think it was a complete whiff. I'm just, you know, if I'm drafting a 3rd round running back, chances are I'm drafting a starter and I'm looking for a little more. A little more opportunity out of my starters is it. I mean, like I said, there was nobody else in that 3rd round that was a world beater this week, and that feels pretty good. But
I mean, yeah, I agree with you. I think the 2 running backs on my bench have good chance to outperform James Conner moving on. So
James Robinson for sure. I mean, I don't know if you saw, but yeah, Doug Peterson in the postgame presser, you know, they asked him what they learned from this game, and I think the first thing out of his mouth was how much we rely on James Robinson.
So, yeah, I'm just hoping that Achilles holds up. No running backs ever come back from an Achilles tear. So,
first, I mean, he looked like in week 1. That's for sure. So, was that 3? I lost count.
Like I don't said, know. I mean, I'll give a 3rd one because it's my team. Is I think I'm going to get some questionable coaching calls because I mean, when you have this much talent, how are you going to pick?
Yeah, but I mean, if they're all going to put up,
Kymore is the weak spot, and I mean, he looked good in the one reception, but it's only one reception.
I'm going to have a hard time starting any Chiefs wide receivers. I think most of the season,
right?
I mean,
especially after what Mahomes said.
Yeah, he's not hiding it. You know, he said that you're going to have to pick each week, and they're going to shuffle it around. So, I mean, I think Mahomes is going to put up numbers, but as far as individual wide receivers, I think it's probably Travis Kelce. That's about it.
Hmm. All right. So, Lucky Ducks. 3 takeaways.
Josh Allen's really good at football.
Josh Allen's too good at football.
He's pretty good. He looked, I mean, for week 1, he looked locked in. He was, you know, 26 of 31. Man's completing 75% of his passes, rushing for touchdowns. I mean, I think he's going to be point producer all year. He
got 35 points and 32 interceptions.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I mean, the you know, when you can run 50 yards in a touchdown and pass for 300 yards, I mean, it's the sky's the limit there. If he can keep getting the rushing numbers, he will justify his ADP and more. I mean, that's outrageous. So I we've got to come down the list and look at some draft busts, like I pointed out in the week one power rankings, because Darnell Mooney, one catch for 8 yards. I mean, that game was a slop fest, I know, but still, it's, I mean, the three targets is for a purported wide receiver one. That scares me. You know, who else is he thrown to?
So, I mean, it was a slop fest, but like, Fields was still made some good completions that went to Pettis. And then also, like, Mooney, I feel like using for end arounds and running. He's fucking fast, but they didn't seem to want to use him that much. So we'll give him a break for this one because it's week one. But also, I don't know, tying yourself to the Bears offense, as you said all preseason. Who wants to do that?
Scary prospect. So, and like I said, to tack on, because this is still, we'll still call this the number two takeaway, but you know, Breece Hall, I don't think there was any way he was ever going to match the preseason hype. And, you know, Michael Carter looked good, got more touches, got more points. If I'm a Breece Hall owner out there, I'm nervous. It may be one of those, you know, he's learning, he'll take over the backfield in weeks 5-6, but I don't think you can start him until he shows it.
And I mean, let's not forget, it's the Jets offense. When have they ever?
Who wants pieces of that? For you? I mean, that's, you know, one of those fantasy cardinal rules. You want pieces of high performing offenses. And even if you're getting the wide receiver one on a bad offense, it just doesn't do a whole lot. So, you know.
But I mean, that's shown on this team with Josh Allen, Joe Mixon, Jamar Chase. All right, third takeaway.
My third takeaway is 10 targets for Pat Freiermuth. Super involved in the offense. You know, if I have a tight end getting 10 targets a game that I took in, I'd have to look back at the draft, but it's got to be 9, 10, 11, somewhere in that range. Yeah, 9. Middle of the ninth round.
If I didn't take Goddard early, Muth was my next go-to. He looked great last year, and I mean, now they have a quarterback that's not an aged-out Ben Roethlisberger. So, yeah, I agree. I think he's going to do good. I mean, like I was saying with Goddard, 7.5, good, 9, good. You can expect that. He gets a touchdown.
I'm like I said, for the draft capital invested, I'm happy with that. I really am.
I feel like my big takeaway, I'll throw in the bonus, is wide receivers are looking rough. Tyler Lockett, arguably droppable. Mooney, we already talked about. I mean, you can ride Jamar Chase as long as possible, but Hopkins suspended. Like, the Ducks have nobody for a second wide receiver. So,
well, and losing Mitchell to the IR means, you know, trades are going to be hard to come by. So I think it may be waiver wire prospects for a while until Hopkins get back from suspension.
All right. Any other things on this matchup? I mean, the Lucky Ducks still put up 110 points with Josh Allen, Jamar Chase scoring half of them. So,
well, that's, I mean, and I could see them putting up those kind of numbers most weeks. You know, Joe Mixon had a pretty good week. I think he's going to be fairly consistent. I think he led the league in running back share the backfield with, you know, 95%. I mean, there's nobody else there. So, you know, his floor is super high. Jamar Chase is going to put up numbers.
So moving on to third highest scorer, third in the power rankings, Steeler Nation, let's ride.
131 is super respectable. Again, fairly well-rounded. You know, getting points from your kicker defense is always just kind of, you know, icing on the cake. It's not expected, but it always helps.
Three takeaways. I think I started us with number one, riding the Broncos. Is a ride or die type play, but
yeah, I think one of my big takeaways is definitely the better things are to come for Javonte Williams. You know, his you know, point number this week wasn't crazy good, but what he did do when he was on the field, he passed the eye test, and you know, 12 targets as a running back, getting the kind of running back target share as a running back is fantasy gold. I mean, that's unheard of. That's Eckler, Christian McCaffrey territory. So, I mean, you know, you take the fumble away, you sprinkle in a touchdown or two, you know, that number is way bigger. So I think he played much better than his number. I think, you know, if anybody didn't see that game and think that, you know, it's a split backfield just because, you know, Melvin Gordon was on the field, I am buying Javonte Williams all day. Number two for me, I'm actually going to jump down to the bench because I think Michael Thomas looked very good in the Saints real close win against the Falcons. He caught some just balls on a rope that James Winston was throwing. Two touchdowns, red zone target, which is always huge in fantasy. It was a big question mark because, you know, he barely played last year, and people just weren't sure if he was ever going to, you know, look like 2019, 2020 Thomas. Third takeaway, and I hate to, I hate to praise Eagles, and you know that, but, I mean, A.J. Brown looked dominant in that game. 13 targets, 10 catches, buck 55. I mean, if he catches a touchdown, that's a big number, you know. That's a top three wide receiver number. So, I mean, clearly, I think
21 points, no touchdown, like
right.
Even better days to come for AJ Brown.
I think that Jalen Hurts has probably found a favorite target. Clearly, Devontae Smith was held to a grand total of zero catches in this game. So, I think that his first game on a new team, you're putting up 155 yards. That's huge. So I was really impressed with his game, and I think that he will probably repeat these kinds of games throughout the season if he keeps getting the kind of volume.
And then, yeah, I think I'll say fourth takeaway is ETN. It's going to be a frustrating couple of weeks while the Jaguars figure out if they want ETN or Robinson and how that's going. So he's dealing with, I would say, the bad end of the stick, maybe because I got Robinson with ETN to pair with the Javonte Williams, who's going to get more. So one might start getting less, one might start getting more. That could be questionable, but he's got Thomas on the bench to put in there. So
yeah, I wouldn't be super worried about it. I guess I do question, the Jaguars and what their plan was. You know, they took ETN in the first round and to give him four carries and, four targets. It's just not a lot of usage for somebody that clearly you thought pretty highly of. So either, James Robinson is just that good that you can't take him off the field, or ETN is just sort of more of a change of pace, like, slot guy. But I would hesitate to start him until he can really show that he can put up consistent numbers, because seven is just not going to cut it.
And I mean, the other thing, both ETN and James Robinson, both out last season with injuries, so who knows what could happen this year.
Plus, they both play on the Jags.
Right. Which, high-powered offense, not so much. Not like the Bills.
I mean, until the light comes on for sunshine there. I just...
all right, moving on to West Carrollton. Three takeaways.
West Carrollton. Number one is I do feel pretty validated, because I was asking, for the last week before the draft, why is Clyde Edwards-Helaire being drafted so low? He's the starting running back on one of the best offenses in football. Dude's going to see volume, and he did. I have no idea why he was being drafted as low as he was. I mean, he went in the fifth round in this draft. He was going, people ahead of him were, Gibson, Cam Akers, David Montgomery, Zeke, all those guys. I'm taking Edwards over him every time. So, I didn't jump on him, so I can't talk too much.
I remember in that draft, if I didn't reach up for Hurts, like, I was taking Clyde Edwards over there. Yeah, we're talking.
Pieces of good offenses. So, that's one big takeaway, is that if he can keep putting up numbers like that, I mean, that's great value for where he got drafted.
And then also, I guess, just tangent off of that. Any concern with Pacheco getting all those, or is that just garbage time with all those carries he got at the end of the game?
It looked like garbage time to me. I mean, I think, most teams use a change of pace back, and, they drafted Pacheco, they kept him on the roster, so clearly they like him. He might vulture a touchdown or two, but I really wouldn't be, too concerned. It wasn't like they were doing a thunder and lightning kind of committee back. I mean, Edwards-Helaire was getting the carries.
Getting the carries, catching those two touchdowns, and played his part and was ready to go. All right.
Takeaway number two.
This is your chance to talk shit about Eagles players.
Well, I mean, we covered it. They drafted him super high too. So I mean, clearly they saw something in him. I don't know. I did hear that the Jeff Okuda, the corner for the Lions, was draped all over him, and just when he was targeted, it wasn't there. You know, he wasn't a world beater last year either, so he may have just been overdrafted. And it's just never going to be there for him. I mean, they're going to have a strong running game with a great O line, and if AJ Brown is going to get every air target along with Dallas Goedert, then it may just be that, you know, that mouth to feed that gets left behind. I don't think he's going to put up zeros most weeks, but I don't have a lot of high hopes for Devontae Smith in that offense. Looking down the list here, I think. If I'm Wes Carrollton, I would maybe be looking to sell Jamal Williams off to somebody who's chasing points. I mean, you know, 15 is a great number, but I don't see that happening most weeks. Now the big caveat here is what the injury is with DeAndre Swift, because if he's obviously going to miss time, then Jamal Williams is a huge get and having, you know, a great bench asset. But as long as Swift is on the field, I don't see that being repeatable. So I you know, had a great first week, vultures and touchdowns, got some great goal line work, but I don't see that lasting.
Yeah, I mean, Jamal did get 11 carries, so they could be sharing that backfield. But I mean, what, Jamal and Swift both combined for almost 40, 50 points as running backs because Swift blew up. So yeah,
for 40. Yeah,
I agree. Great bench asset, and if Swift's injuries belong. It's, I mean, Swift seems to be always battling with injuries, so great bench asset. All right, last takeaway for Wes Carrollton.
I mean, I think my last takeaway is, you know, to quote a legendary football moment, Travis Kelce is who we thought he was. I was worried that, you know, with Tyreek Hill down in Florida now, that defenses would focus too much on Kelce. He would get double teamed, chipped off the line, and just wouldn't be able to put up numbers. And at least for week one, he showed that he is pretty much matchup proof. You know, 121 and touchdown as a tight end is just, you know, you'll take that 10 times out of 10. Six first downs is huge in this league and those points. So I think, again, this is one of those players that, you know, you put a lot of draft capital in and you really need them to prove you right, because, you know, you're skipping over really good wide receivers and running backs to fill the tight end spot. And like I said, at least for week one, validated.
Yeah, I'm sitting over here happy with 7 points for a tight end, and Kelsey's throwing down 22. So
that's what you drafted.
I agree with you on all points.
Yeah, that's what you drafted for.
All right, any last takeaways from this matchup or either of these teams?
I mean, I think they're both pretty strong teams that will have a good amount of success this year. I mean, they both put up pretty good numbers. Their benches have some potential there, and their, you know, the starters they drafted high produced. So that's the kind of stuff I'm looking for, and I would not want to face them going down the stretch.
Utah, give me two versus maybe hyphen.
So
I gotta admit, I don't know if I know who either of these two people are. I gotta start learning the people in our league.
So maybe hyphen is pretty sure that's Dan, old roommate Dan, I believe, right?
Oh yeah.
You talking
the one that chugged the glass of vodka and quoted JFK?
I believe so. Yes.
All right.
I'm so, a big fan, okay. Yeah, Utah Gimme 2 is one of Don's old coworkers from like a decade ago. I don't think they even work together anymore, but dude stays in the league, so respect to him.
Okay. We'll start with Utah Gimme 2. Three takeaways. What do you got?
I guess one is, you know, AJ Dillon having great numbers as somebody who was drafted behind Aaron Jones. You know, Aaron Jones didn't get near the touches they thought he might, or that he really should, I guess, for the caliber
that player was insane. Watching that game, I was like, why is Aaron Jones not touching this ball more? But
I mean, AJ Dillon had a great game. Yeah, he did have a great game. Six targets from the backfield is super nice for running back. So I would be encouraged to see that if I was an AJ Dillon owner. And think, you know, I there are going to be weeks where, you know, it's going to be flipped, I'm sure. But it looks like both of them can still be fantasy relevant together in that backfield with, you know, no wide receivers for Aaron Rodgers to throw to.
Number two takeaway.
I'd say my number two takeaway is I would be super encouraged again if I was the Jalen Waddle owner. A lot of people were not sure what his number is going to look like with Tyreek Hill, you know, now being kind of the big dog on the wide receiver front down there in Miami. But I mean, Jalen Waddle put up record numbers as a rookie. So, I mean, he's got the talent clearly. It was just about opportunity, and he still had it. You know, he made the most of his four catches, caught a touchdown. You know, that could be a potent offense with the two of them on either side of the field. So I'd be super encouraged for him that he can still produce with Tyreek Hill also getting good numbers this week.
I mean, yeah, I think good numbers, not necessarily wide receiver one numbers, but he's going to have to. Well, I'll just say my takeaway now. I already started. Looking at his wide receivers, it seems like there's no standout wide receiver one, because I agree with you on Waddle, but I don't know. I don't see him putting up the numbers that a lot of the wide receiver ones are. He might squeak into the top 12, but looking down, like DJ Moore not panning out to all his preseason hype.
Well, that's, if you're going to look for a wide receiver one on this team, it probably should have been DJ Moore. He's the highest drafted wide receiver on the team, because, you know, Jalen Waddle was a seventh round keeper. So, if you're looking for another takeaway as a segue, concerning is a strong term, but I would say concerning game for DJ Moore, not really being able to produce with, you know, one of the better quarterbacks he's played with in recent years. So, I mean, you know, he was a third round pickup. Like I said, highest drafted player for this, or highest drafted wide receiver for this team, and 6 points is not what you're looking for.
Just looking up the last thing I want to say about this team is Cole Kmet. Are you worried about that? Are we just throwing that game out and seeing what happens? I know you don't like the Bears offense, but Cole Kmet had a lot of hype. He only had one target, didn't catch it.
I think this team is a prime streaming tight end candidate early. I mean, if I'm the manager of this team, I would not have any qualms about cutting Kmet after 1 week and jumping on the stream. I mean, you didn't invest a lot in him to begin with. The offense didn't look super hot. I don't think he's ever going to be the player you want him to be. Matchup to matchup, maybe, you know, you pick him up down the road on that stream, but I think drafting him and starting him in the first place is really kind of relegating yourself to the tight end stream from the get. So yes, the answer is yes. I'm concerned. Just not a big fan of the offense in general. Clearly, they're not looking his way a ton. I'm worried.
All right, moving on to maybe hyphen. Milkshake Teddy. Showing up late to the draft. Starting the enigma, George Kittle.
The enigma that is, yes.
Wild card Teddy. What do you got?
Well, I mean, the first takeaway is the, you know, the thing you can't ignore, which is the wide receiver production. Cause I mean, Justin Jefferson is just a man. It is not going to surprise me at all if he finishes the season as a wide receiver one, in all of fantasy. I mean, you know, 11 targets, you know, damn near 200 yards, two touchdowns. I mean, he was pretty much unguardable against what should have been a pretty good defense. So, I mean, between him and Diggs, you know, putting together 20 targets combined and 300 yards, I mean, that is a potent combo that got auto-drafted to this team.
Yeah, I am kind of curious on what would have happened if he had showed up for the draft, where Diggs would have fell, because I bet he wouldn't have taken Jefferson Diggs back-to-back.
Well, he probably would have messed up, you know, Saquon Barkley, so I'm not too broken up about it, but... you know, like I said, for this week it worked. I think both of them are going to put up big numbers most of the year. So, you know, he'll back his way into some wins. It's going to happen. But knowing the history of this team and where they usually finish up, yet to be seen.
Takeaway number two.
What happened to Aaron Rodgers?
Minnesota Vikings, baby. Actually, I don't know. You can't ignore that Rodgers started last year getting crushed. Maybe same, if not less, points to the. I think it was the Saints last year. So,
yeah, I mean they had a slow start last year. But he just looked bad. And I mean, you know, not having a great game is one thing, but 3 points is just, I mean, that's going to sink you sometimes. I mean, it, you know, he wasn't getting drafted super high like he had been in previous years. So, I mean, there's some validity there, but you know, unless Alan Lazard is the, you know, is the silver bullet here, does he have the weapons to put up the numbers you're going to be looking for? I just don't know if that's the case.
And also to the Vikings defense, who many would say are not a good defense, myself not included. I'm a Vikings homer, and they picked off Rodgers, first NFC North team to pick him off in like 3 years, I think it was.
Oh, yeah, it was like 400 attempts or something. It was outrageous.
Yeah.
So
yeah, he's just getting hammered. I don't know if it's the O-line or what. I thought he was just going to quit that day.
Yeah, whatever it was, like I said, I'd be worried and looking to Matt Stafford on the bench maybe until things improve.
I don't know. Matt Stafford sitting on the bench with 8 points, but against Buffalo Bills, can't hold that against him.
The options you got.
All right. Last takeaway from you.
I think my last takeaway is really kind of an overall maybe injury worry for this team. I mean, the depth was questionable going into it. And then obviously, you know, Kittle didn't play this game and got started. Chris Godwin left the game early with an injury. Michael Gallup's trying to come back from a pretty good injury, didn't play this week. Zach Ertz didn't practice today. I mean, you know, it's pretty early to be having these kind of injury problems. People both coming off injury and going on to injury reports. So I'd be worried about depth. If these kinds of injury scares linger into bye weeks, that's when you're going to have real issues. So it's a lot early on to try to overcome for somebody who doesn't, you know, pay a whole lot of attention to their roster, let's say.
And yeah, running back's not so strong. His highest scoring running back on the bench, but that's Miles Sanders, who scored a touchdown in a game where four different people running the ball scored a rushing touchdown. So I don't know how much you can count on Miles Sanders, I guess is my takeaway of he's sitting the bench, which I wouldn't have done that with Deontay Harris starting, but that's why he's the wild card. And I don't know. I think he's going to find himself near the bottom of the power rankings here soon.
Well, that's, I mean,
I think he got lucky.
Even if you get Miles Sanders on the field, you know, on the starting roster there, you know, injury concerns last year, Antonio Gibson injury concerns last year. It's just, you know, precarious position to put yourself in with not a lot of depth and some injury prone running backs. So.
Yeah. I think I'm willing to guarantee that Teddy's going to be finish bottom three in the league. Zero chance of making the playoffs.
History is proven you're right.
Number four, I think this is going to be his highest rank of the season. Week one right here. Any other takeaways from this game?
I mean,
highly underperforming, Teddy performing exactly as expected.
Yeah, I think Utah have better games. I mean, Eckler didn't do well. We didn't really touch on that too much, but you know, he'll have better weeks. DJ Moore will have better weeks. So I think better days are ahead for Utah. Probably maybe some worse days ahead for Hyphen.
All right. Moving on to, I think, the last game.
It should be.
Oh, no, we got two more.
Yeah, Bauer in Vegas.
We're going to do Bauer Vegas now, and then we'll talk about the basement matchup.
Close game, yes.
But we'll get there. all right, Austin Bauer. Three takeaways from Austin Bauer.
Well, I mean, this goose egg from Cam Akers is just staring me in the face. So, I mean, it's got to be mentioned. I don't know if you want to wrap the entire Rams offense into one takeaway, but again, you know, Cam Akers had a lot of hype coming into the season, but coming off injury, you just don't know. So to invest a pretty early third round pick in who looks to may not even be the starter on the team, that is a scary prospect early on. So he got three carries, didn't look great in any of them. Obviously 0 yards off him, and then with a coach quote during the post game presser about
make the most of your carries, all three of them.
That is that. I mean, you know, alarm bells are going off. Yeah, make the most of your time on the field or whatever it was.
That's what Woof. You get. Deal with it.
Woof. That's what you say about, you know, practice squad players. So I would be concerned as a Cam Akers owner, as a Cam Akers investor, in an early third like Austin Bauer did. And I mean, you better hope that Christian McCaffrey can do better than 13, because there's not a lot coming behind this. You know, James Cook fumbled and barely saw the field. There's not a lot of running back action going on this team.
Locker room after the Panthers Browns is, Baker, you need to get the ball to Christian McCaffrey a lot more times. 10 carries, 5 receptions. He's the best player on the team. Give him the ball.
Yeah, I mean, you know, he's been MVP candidate in the past, so you can't walk off the field in a loss with your star player only having, you know, 10 carries. You just, as a coach, you can't do that. As a quarterback, you can't do that. Don't like it.
All right, I think those were 2 takeaways. So one more for Austin Bauer.
I guess one takeaway I will mention, and this is one of those, you know, if you look at the stats, Treylon Burks, the rookie receiver from it's like Arkansas. Titans. Yeah.
Oh, I don't know what school he went to.
I think he's from Arkansas, but he, you know, there were mixed reports out of camp. You know, one day you'd read that you know, dude can't run a route to save his life. Then the next day he's, you know, making these circus catches. So I was really interested to see what he would look like in week one. And while his numbers weren't huge, he looked really good on the field. He was on the field the whole time, which is obviously, you know, a big, you know, boon for wide receivers, just to be on the field and get looks. And when he did get catches, you know, they were for a good chunk yardage, 55 yards on 3 catches. So I would look for more production for him going forward as he gets a little more involved in the offense. You know, if they get in some different game scripts where they're down a lot and they're throwing a lot, I think he could be a nice asset coming off the bench.
I think the last thing that I will add for Austin Bauer is, yeah, the obvious one. You can't count on your quarterback and defense to score 60 points, more than half your points.
Not sustainable. I mean, yeah, the Pittsburgh defense
used it against Joe Burrow, but I don't see that happening anymore. They got,
you're not gonna get 5 turnovers every game. Not gonna happen.
7 sacks.
Yeah, blocked punts or block. It was the blocked edge point. Yeah, I mean that's an outlier performance if I've ever seen one. Pat Mahomes probably will put up 36 points a game because he's Pat Mahomes, but yeah, winning the game on the back of the defense is not what you want
to
do.
All right, moving on to Billy Vegas.
Ooh, I would be I'd be scared. I'm you know, you look up and down this list, the bench is just not super exciting. You lose your quarterback until probably week, you know, 8 at least, who takes down your number 2 wide receiver with him. I mean, and they both looked like trash before, you know, Dak got hurt. CeeDee Lamb could not get separation. This is supposed to be his breakout year. You know, Dak couldn't hit the broadside of a barn, 14 of 29. I mean, that offense looked figured out. You know, they looked figured out. They, you know, Devin White, the linebacker for the Bucs, even said as much the day after, that they knew what the Cowboys were going to do from last year. So, you know, Kellen Moore's offense down there in Dallas has been figured out. They looked just flat bad, and that's going to be an issue.
This is coming from a Cowboys fan, for those who don't know.
I would know.
Calling it how it is.
And I told people, you know, that when you watch a Cowboys game, it's a feel thing. You know when to start drinking early, even when it's, you know, first quarter. And this was a this was a drinking early game. It's just they either come with it or they don't. And you could tell that they were flat coming out of, you know, at least on offense. The defense looked pretty good. You know, holding a Tom Brady offense to 19 points really is nothing to scoff at. But that offense is terrible. And, you know, if you were going to bench it before, you are now, because, you know, Dak's out for at least 6 to 8. And I don't, you know, I'm not taking a Cooper Rush wide receiver. So.
All right. Takeaway number 2.
Is, you know, the faith and maybe misplaced faith in rookie wide receivers. You know, he's got Garrett Wilson and Drake London down there in the bench. I mean, I like the kind of, you know, high ceiling draft investment, just kind of see what you got kind of things. But on some pretty weak offenses, I don't see them, you know, playing their way into the starting lineup or making an argument to get them started. I'd be worried about those kinds of players just kind of burning a bench spot for most of the season. It's that kind of guy that you can't quite drop, but you're just never really going to put in your starting lineup. And I just don't know how you, I mean, he's got to play one of them because unless he, you know, if you sit CeeDee Lamb, then somebody's got to come on. Keenan Allen's got the injury that's keeping him out of the game tomorrow night. But I just, you know, rookie wide receivers in bad offenses is not where I want to invest my starting spots.
I will say, because you brought it up and we're doing this after waivers have processed, I know we haven't talked about anybody else's waivers, but he is going to take a chance on Curtis Samuel instead of Wilson. So he dropped one of the rookies to take a chance on.
Did he drop? I see that now. Yeah.
Yeah. So he's taking your advice, dropped one of them and dropped the Jets. So I agree with the one he dropped, but Curtis Samuel, I mean, I want him to do well, but it's Curtis Samuel. He's done well in games and then scored a goose egg the next game.
Yeah, I mean, it looks like he's really made a big investment in the Commanders offense in general. You know, he picked up Carson Wentz as well. So he went with the Carson Wentz, Curtis Samuel stack. He liked what he saw. So we'll see if both of them hit the starting lineup week one on the squad. But it looks like the Commanders offense is something he wants to buy some stock in.
I mean, I'm not one to buy stock in the Commanders offense.
Nor am I.
Funny anecdote of them because I'm calling from Washington. But I don't know if you saw that article where they made all those mugs with the state of Washington.
Washington, yes. I hope it was tongue-in-cheek, but I don't think it was.
All right, third takeaway. I think, yeah, we're on number three for that, for Billy Vegas.
My third takeaway is if Leonard Fournette is gonna run like he did in week one, that could be a game changer for most weeks. Because I'm you know, it seemed like he was averaging 10 yards a carry. I mean, he wasn't getting touched until 3 or 4 yards down the field. You know, busting off chunk plays left and right. I mean, he looked real good running people over, using his size. I was impressed with how Leonard Fournette looked. Now, the Dallas defense isn't terrible. You know, they led the league in turnovers last year. They were, you know, the more respectable side of the ball for sure. So to really get the ball just run down your throat like that, I was pretty impressed by the Leonard Fournette performance. So if he can keep doing that, you know, Chubb's always going to get the volume on a run for his team. The running backs could make up for the deficiencies of the wide receivers on this team.
Yeah, I don't know. I've always been down on Fournette, but he proved me wrong this time. But I don't know. There's something about him that I don't think he's going to be putting up these points every week. But I mean, he looked great. I can't deny that. I feel like my takeaway is going to be the elephant in the room, Davante Adams, getting 17 receptions.
I purposely avoided that 25-point performance because I figured you'd mention it at the end. But
yeah, so I mean, Davante Adams giving 17 receptions, looking great, having that Derek Carr college connection.
That boy.
It's his boy. I will say that 17 targets is the exact same amount of targets that Darren Waller had in week one last year, and that did not play out very well for me last year on my team. So it's 17 receptions from Derek Carr doesn't always mean 17 receptions, but Davante Adams is not Darren Waller, so I think that's going to stay
up. They're paying Davante Adams, you know, $20+ million a year. I think that justifies 17 targets most weeks.
Yeah. All right. Any last takeaways from here? Billy Vegas team very underperforming. Both teams and underperforming in this.
I mean, like I said, word moving forward. You know, the Cowboys stack is now pretty much trash. Keenan Allen's injury was a hamstring, I believe, which is always a scary prospect for wide receivers that can linger even if you are on the field. So I'd be a concerned Billy Vegas manager for sure. Really for both these teams. Like I said, you can't count on 60 points from two players. You know, other than that, it's a 0, 2, 1, 5, 6. I just think neither of these teams inspire a lot of confidence in me.
All right. We've gone to the last game of week one. This is one that I've been excited to talk about because I love talking shit about our commissioner, Roy Jones Jr.
This week.
And I feel like I don't like talking shit about Torrey, but I'm not afraid to. Both these teams scoring about half of what their expected point totals were. So let's get into it. We'll start with Vinegar Strokes. I want to end with Don because it's just going to be a shit show.
I was going to say, I don't know if this counts as a team takeaway, but the 65% coach score that the commish put up in week one is just abysmal. It was 15 percentage points lower than the next worst manager at 80%. So, I mean, inexcusable for really an experienced fantasy football manager.
All right. Well, I'm not going to count that as a takeaway because I want to start with Vinegar Strokes. We'll get to Roy Jones Jr. here in a bit. Vinegar Strokes, what's your first takeaway?
I'd say my first takeaway for this team, I was looking for positives to highlight, but really I think they're all going to be negatives because how can you really find a positive for a 60-point team? But the running back efficiency on this team was lacking in week one. Henry getting only 80 yards on 20 carries, 26 yards on 17 carries for David Montgomery in what should have been a run heavy, rainy, gross game. That is a concern for me. If Henry's going to rely on these 40, 50, 60 yard chunk running plays to look like, the running back one and where you drafted him, that's not going to happen most weeks. I mean, it did for him before, so I won't say it won't happen, but this is the Derrick Henry of 2016, 2017, when he wasn't getting those chunk plays. He's fairly
82 yards against the Giants. This is the Giants. We're not talking elite rushing defense.
And a running back with not a lot of prospects in the passing game really needs to get those chunk plays, and he just didn't get it.
All right, takeaway number two.
So speaking of underperforming running backs, I wrote in the week one draft rankings, or week one power rankings, there was no way that Damien Pierce was going to perform like he was getting drafted, like he was getting hyped. As the Texans cut a running back, once a week, the hype train got more and more momentum to where, an unproven rookie was going to be a league winner before he even stepped on the field. And it seemed like people forgot that he was playing on the Texans, that he was a rookie, and 33 yards and 11 carries, only one catch. He didn't get the volume that people were expecting, didn't get the production people were expecting. So it's just not a great NFL debut for Damien Pierce.
I am thankful that I did not jump on the Damien Pierce train because I was playing on it in the draft and he just didn't fall to where I wanted to take him at. So glad I dodged that bullet.
I was looking for him too. I was definitely looking at him as a valued player because I was drinking the Kool-Aid. I was fully on the hype train, and I'm glad I didn't get the opportunity. So now I can sit here and make fun of it.
He drafted him round six. Yeah, I was going to get him an eight, but or I guess seven because I didn't have an eight pick because I had. All right, third takeaway.
What happened to Mike Williams? I mean, there's just for a player that was supposed to be, having a nice, continuation of his really torrent of great games towards the end of last season. Two catches, 10 yards in a game where Keenan Allen went out with injury. I mean, he should have been peppered with targets. He's a 50-50, throw down the field guy with one of the best throw down the field quarterbacks in the game right now, and Justin Herbert. So I was shocked. I mean, Mike Williams was also on my, draft target list if he hadn't gotten kept. And he disappeared. I don't know what happened there, but I'm not super worried about it just yet, especially because Keenan Allen is going to miss at least one game. So, he'll be the wide receiver one against the Chiefs tomorrow. That'll be a really telltale sign to see how his season's going to go. Because if he can't get the targets as the, the big dog with Keenan Allen out, then I'd be concerned.
Yeah, I'll give him one more week because, I feel like it was kind of weird game too because Eckler didn't get as many points as he was expected to get. So the script just wasn't in their favor that week. I guess, yeah. So I'll come in with maybe some positives of on down the season. I mean, he's got Khalil Herbert. So once the Bears kind of come to their senses and realize that he's the better running back, he at least has a starting running back there. Kenneth Walker, I said I was going to be positive, but Kenneth Walker, he was injured, didn't play, but I mean, Rashad Penny looked good. So I don't imagine Walker getting too many carries. Algier.
Penny gets hurt, but yeah.
So Algier, he's just inactive. He's inactive, but Cordarrelle Patterson, we'll talk about in a bit, but
he was a healthy scratch for this game, which you never want to see for anybody, you know, rostered that's a healthy scratch that's scary.
That's another bullet I'm glad that I dodged.
You were talking about him. And we'll
okay. I guess I have no positives, because the other thing that I'm going to say is all these people that are on his bench with healthy scratches, he drops Alan Lazard, who was injured week one and is going to be Aaron Rodgers' probably leading receiver when he comes back. But
yeah, there's a solid chance
off the roster now.
When we get off this podcast, that I'm going to go put a waiver claim in for Lazard, because I just don't understand that move. I mean,
I don't think you need a waiver claim. I think you can get him right now.
He was dropped today.
Oh yeah, you do got to wait a day.
Yeah, so he'll process.
Yeah,
tomorrow.
You can have him. I'm saving my waiver. My team's stacked. I have nobody to drop.
Not like he had a bad, you know, he didn't have a bad game. He didn't play, and Aaron Rodgers is still, you know, he's been an MVP. So recently, I don't.
And he doesn't trust those receivers yet. I mean, Watson dropped that easy touchdown. So I think Alan Lazard coming back is.
Yeah, if you're asking me if I'd rather have him or like, you know, Chris Olave, I think it's got to be Alan Lazard 10 times out of 10.
So, bold play. I tried to talk positives for Tory's team. Couldn't do it. Like you said, scoring under 70 points, it's hard to do. But let's get to the fun team to talk about. Our commissioner, last place, terrible showing. What are your takeaways?
So do you want? Should we talk about the one positive first before we just go straight downhill?
Let's end it on a positive, because I might bring it back down after that. I'll try to keep it positive. But
well, and the positive is on a bench, so I don't even know if you can call that a positive. But anyway,
oh, that's fair.
Okay, well, let's start with some big glaring negatives. Kyle Pitts was talked up. This was supposed to be the year he used to take a big leap forward. The commission himself was talking him up huge. He's saying he's going to target him in all his drafts. He took him on all his teams. Ends this game with two catches for 19 yards. I mean, that is for what he should have been for this offense. That is unacceptable. For where he was drafted, unacceptable. So I don't know if it was a game script thing. I don't know if they were just game planned him out of looks. But that is a huge point of concern for me if I'm a Kyle Pitts owner and if I'm the commish.
I don't know. I'm going to give Pitts a bye. He had a 1,000 yards as a rookie for a tight end, so I'm gonna give it another week. Still have a little hope for him, but yeah, I mean, drafting him early, hoping for, like I said, 7 points is all you're hoping for a tight end. He gets 2.4. That's not gonna make you not feel good. 7 targets though, a little positive there. But second takeaway.
So this team drafted back-to-back running backs 1-2. As I did, not to do my own horn, but you know, my running backs went for about 50. These went for a combined 14. So the big takeaway for me is the lack of usage. 14 carries combined between Kamara and Aaron Jones is not good. So game script can be an excuse for the Vikings-Packers game. Because they were down early, they were throwing a bunch. But, he got outscored by A.J. Dillon. Kamara with 40 yards, and only 4 receptions, where really the passing game has been where he's shined and what's really made him, a special fantasy player. That is not what you want from your 1-2 running back. When you go 1-2 running back, you expect a high floor, you know, some weeks where they're winning you games, and then you piece it together with wide receivers, and that just did not happen this week.
I don't know. Maybe the Packers look at the box score after and realize that he almost averages 10 yards a carry and give him the ball more than 5 times next week.
Well, and like I said, it could have been that they had moved to the pass quicker than they wanted. But with nobody to pass to, you think that he would have more than 27 yards out of the backfield. So it's just, it's a question mark there for a super talented, you know, real life player to only be looking at, you know, 70-ish yards total offense.
All right. Takeaway number 3, positives about his bench.
Yeah. I mean, you know, his bench damn near outscored his starting lineup.
That's what I was just looking at.
it's close. It's close. So, I mean, obviously the takeaway is Cordell Patterson. I mean, like you said, he's not a young guy. It was an offense that's not supposed to be good. Their offensive line is trash. The running game was really not supposed to be this productive. And he's putting up, you know, 120 yards on 22 carries, getting some work in the passing game, because obviously he used to be a wide receiver, so he should be pretty good at that. But 26 points from Cordell Patterson was not what I was expecting right out of the gate.
And then, yeah, I'll just feed off of that positive for his bench. I think he's going to start every player on his bench except Devonta Parker, because it's Devonta Parker, and how can you trust him? And we never even talked about the New England offense or lack thereof, but Tyler Boyd's going to be the number 2 with T. Higgins probably out with concussion. J.K. Dobbins practiced full. He's coming back. For Darryl Patterson,
I believe, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. Kirk Cousins, Trey Lance, I think it's going to be tough because Trey Lance had that wet game that you throw out. But, I mean, Kirk Cousins got Justin Jefferson, so.
That'd be the only switch that I would question you on if you're starting all these bench players, because, like, you know, Trey Lance, yeah, played on a back lot. You could barely see the lines on the field. So I'm not going to fault his passing game too much. And he still had 13 carries for 54 yards, which for a quarterback is where you're going to see a lot of value. So I think that this is going to be one of Trey Lance's lowest games of the year. I think we're going to see a lot better numbers, a lot better play from him moving forward when they're not playing in the actual rain. You know, if he throws a touchdown or two to add to that running, all of a sudden, you know, we're talking differently. So I'm not super worried about Trey Lance, especially for where he invested the draft pick, which was pretty late. So I'd be still pretty confident in playing Trey Lance moving forward.
Yeah, I think he definitely earned the last spot in the power rankings for his coaching decisions, but I think he's going to be working his way up. He's not looking as bad as Teddy. Like, he's got a decent team. I think, like you were saying, with Kamara Jones, if they start getting more,
I think that's inevitable. I mean, they're too good of players to not see more volume than that.
So yeah, I think Don has got some better days ahead, but it was great to just see him crumble so miserably this week.
Well, and especially for, you know, he went 10-3 in the regular season last year, so to have this kind of a you know, steaming pile of shit, we'll call it, in week one is just it was surprising to say the least.
And yeah, I guess final takeaway is just looking at their max points. I mean, Don could have broke 100, but Torrey's max points was 76. That is gotta hurt.
Well, you can't fault him too much, but like I said, the you know, the coaching effort from Roy Jones Jr. questionable is an understatement.
All right, now, so this is our first episode. I think we went a little long on a lot of these previews. We'll probably adjust it as we go on, but let's just close out talking a little bit about next week of the matchup that you're most looking forward to, which I've been looking at it closely, at least what I think it is. I think you're going to agree with me, but I'll let you go first. Matchup you're looking most forward to.
It's. I think it's not a question. It's got to be you versus Steeler Nation. I mean, two teams coming off strong first week performances. You know, a lot of great players with high upside. You know, the projections speak for themselves. You know, you're projected up in the 40s. He's projected in the high 20s. I think that has a I would take the over in that matchup for sure.
yeah, looking forward to that. Hoping for the high score that got robbed for me this week. Just looking at the other ones, I'm seeing, trying to see who I'm thinking is going to be low scoring week. It's maybe going to be Teddy Austin, but I think maybe the other matchup I'm most excited for is Don's projected to beat you right now. I don't know if you've set any lineups yet or if he has.
I mean, I'll be shopping for a new defense. I did some switching around. I got Daryl Henderson in the starting lineup after he looked real good in week one. So, you know, some of my projections are a little low. I can live with that. I may be looking at my wide receivers, but I think these projections are a little soft. But
yeah, it's looking like Don has made some adjustments. He's got Patterson in the lineup, not adding in everybody like I suggested, but he's projected to win. So I'm looking at both of our matchups next week. They should be, I don't know, I think we'll be competing for high scores again next week and seeing how it plays out. But
the other matchup I do want to mention is the West Carrollton Lucky Ducks matchup. Like I said, I think Lucky Ducks got the short end of some bad luck. Some bad luck there in week one. West Carrollton obviously had a pretty good week, but I you know, with Josh Allen, Joe Mixon, Jamar Chase, I mean, this is going to be a high scoring team. So I can see Lucky Ducks pulling the upset on West Carrollton and putting them both at 1-1 going into week three.
Well, that's it for us at the Rebirth Podcast. I'm Steve Gang.
I'm Dan Wood.
And we'll talk to y'all next week.